we provided two leases for
members. Okay.
We just went for one lease.
But after three hours of iteration, I had to review that program because we thought it only natural and important before the committee can proceed with drafting its report, or the drafting of its report, to afford the president an opportunity to respond to some of the submission, so that when the committee sits down and do its final report, it takes into consideration the responses from the cabinet itself, because what we have before us is a document presented by the minister and the president on behalf of the selected council. From here on, what is going to happen is that today we'll then receive this input from Minister Manuel, and the committee will start in earnest the drafting of its final report, which I hope should be in the ATC the latest Monday. We'll then see how to take it into the House of Debate and so on and so forth. I must commend the Minister for responding to this last hour invitation, which I did last week. And I suddenly realized that where he does not have the machinery and the capacity that he used to have in the National Treasury, it is him and one or two people. Nonetheless, we believe he's a very capable man. He would be able to give us their response to what has been raised with us and what has been raised with them, because it's all the submissions that have been made to us, both orally and in writing form, in a written form. Thank you very much, Honorable Minister. I would hand over to you, and because I can see the presentation is not in my back, I'm going to move so that I can also be part and parcel of those that are in your report. Thank you very much.
Opted to focus
it's always there, and so it's one of those issues we will work through from time to time. I think the third word is worth pausing. I want to encourage the committee to you to be very unafraid in the way in which it does that intermediation between the views we put on the table and that I described the last time, views to which we have no particular emotional attachment. Your ties won't be punctured because of a disagreement with me. I won't call your names, but I would say thank you very much. Those disagreements are fundamentally important in shaping an institution that is not shaped. The content issues, I think, make it somewhat difficult. We don't want to be too judgmental on the views of the many people who wrote in, including Mrs. Groom, whose two submissions could evoke a lot of discussion. But we won't deal with the issues of detail now. Lifting from our own brief paper and also the submission, the first point is that as a country we need a long-term plan. We need that long-term plan. And then something that is disputed, but we really say that the effort emphasis against the long-term plan, the ability to effect change. Definitely, we would all like South Africa to be a high growth, high skill, high wage, high human development economy with low carbon emissions. But that's not what we are. Doesn't mean that we can't ever get there, but in order to get there, we have to be able to pursue a path. The planning must allow us to get in that direction, but we can't do everything at the same time. So those are the kinds of trade-offs that climbing has to deal with. And then, in respect to all of government, across the three spheres, fundamentally importantly, we know, and it's worth repeating, that the provincial growth and development strategies, the municipal IDPs, are frequently misaligned from each other and most often misaligned from their budget. What we need is to construct the strong synergies across all the government. The interrelationship between policy, planning, monitoring, and evaluation is something I'll come back to in a while. And then, finally, the point here is that we will be influenced, we must be influenced by both successes and the stumbles of others, but we need to take account of our very own experience. It's worth noting that in the framing of our constitution, the exercise of executive authority is of cabinet acting together, and for this reason, ministers are individually but also collectively responsible. So the way in which that collective responsibility finds resonance in everything we do, but also in the frame of planning, is fundamentally important. And then the institutional difficulty. I know it was raised by way of discussion when we first convened to discuss the Green Paper, and has been raised in various other submissions. If you have a planning commission that takes the best advice, that makes a series of recommendations, and then it comes along and cabinet says, well, we have a final port of call. What does that do to the plan? But differently, the challenge of certainly some tremendous contribution, included the issue that if you once lost your sight, then there's always the risk that cameras might sink until the next election in 2014. But you need a longer horizon to fix what you recognize is wrong. We come here and we say we don't have an easy answer. But again, it's one of those points that I ask the committee to consider and make further recommendations. One of the points that has been frequently misunderstood, and that is we don't have a system of cabinet now. The cabinet system is very highly collegial. And that even when ministers are assigned a particular responsibility, like chairing instead of meetings or coordinating a particular activity of cabinet, it doesn't place ministers apart. I mean, I know that there's been a lot of silliness about this in the press in particular. There is no such. If indeed you look for an example, we have a system of budget-making in South Africa that is actually more participatory at cabinet level than almost any other in the world. Between the submissions that every department and cabinet finally agree on allocations, there's a ministerial committee on the budget that will pore over every submission and apply its mind. And by the time cabinet receives a report, 11 of its members will have sat down. And there's only one rule that applies to the ministerial committee on the budget, and that is that you can't talk your report. Power that's given to the Minister of Finance to say to the Minister of Health, sorry, you're not here to discuss health. This is not a second bite to chair you, so it's possible to deal with this issue without constructing the necessary contradiction that even some of the submissions believe might happen here. The presidency has a role coordination, and frequently the ministers in the presidency chair take on the responsibility of being the MPP for the president. It's just how the system works as well. So. One of the questions is, if we don't have the green paper, but arose again in the submission, do we take over all of the responsibility of planning? We said that we won't do micro-planning, we said that we won't be gatekeepers, and we won't take narrow decisions on the budget, and those issues still remain. They still remain, and where there are deficiencies in departmental or provincial planning, or even in respect of local government, part of what we need to do is to strengthen it, not to allow them to look on and we take over the responsibility. I'll come back to talk about how some countries deal with the long-term plan. But one of the, another of the submissions actually point a finger at the Green Paper, suggesting that we've conflated vision and plan. Now, it's quite important that we never conflate them. But it's equally important that we understand that there's a relevant place for each of these. And I still am of the view that in taking on the idea of the vision, it should be possible to have a highly participatory process that invites all South Africans into this discussion, because those discussions will become a very important starting point for taking issues forward. And once we have South Africans talking, it's possible to sift through that and then establish an empirical basis for what we do. We've drawn on the experiences of Korea and Malaysia because there are so many submissions that say, but you should be talking about vision. That's just a big political issue. But if one looks at the first introduced Vision 2020 in the 80s. The Prime Minister Mahathir drove a Malaysian bus car, Proton, number plate 2020. So the Vision issue actually informs a lot of the other details. And the big challenge for them, don't talk about cars. The big challenge for Malaysia was how do they move from being this country with rubber trees where latex is tapped and very little else. And the 2020 vision has to take a long view, and then we'll close out the detail of that. And South Korea is an even more impressive story of that big transition from basically a basket case. The end of the Korean War, but still in the 70s, they were under structural government. To this high level IT that planning was brought there. In the questions raised by the inputs, the linkages to the context and the web were fundamentally important, and that's an issue that clearly must be canvassed when the detail of planning is done. Secondly, the fear that people have about all kinds of names they call the minister, it's fundamentally important to state, as the Green Paper does, that there's no equivocation about the responsibility of cabinet at the centre of policy making. And then getting these balances right between the nature of the challenge. What frequently is people talk about how you must get all kinds of things handed over to small and micro businesses, forgetting that part of the strength of the nation is not just about the millions of atoms of little five-person entrepreneurial activity, but also about building brands and about competing globally and about firms that are capable of employing large numbers of people with all of the norms of the Labour Relations Act in place. It's not one or the other, it's about getting both of these there. The example of fishing is used and it frequently is exactly the same thing. The big challenge, and again, is something that a number of these submissions drew attention to. Where sort of planning ends and policy starts. And it's a bad chicken egg situation. It's not possible to draw a neat line and separate. If one were to take the example, biggest challenge in South Africa as we speak is that there are too many people unemployed. Too many people who've never had a job in their lives. Too many people under 30 who cannot find employment. Too many people under 30 who make up this large number of people who've been rendered unemployed, certainly in the past 12 months. Full employment is an objective. It has to be an objective. If full employment is an objective, how do you get that to happen in what sort of time period? Now, the vision has to be full employment, but many of the policy issues in detail need to be pulled out, and there needs to be a very close correlation between these two, failing which you run the risk of building very well-empowered labor aristocracy with large numbers of people unemployed. These are big challenges that we will need to work through as we proceed. Now the questions of the National Planning Commission, again, Right, I don't say arose because I think, Chair, that this will be one of those debates that won't occupy us for a little while. The model that we propose is a National Planning Commission comprised of external stakeholders who have strongly advised us. And as I said earlier, Cabinet will still have to take a decision. And then a number of submissions are critical of the approach. By the doctor from the HSRC suggests that government runs the risk of being seen to outsource. So we're conscious of this, I want to repeat, in going through the submissions, I'm not sort of weeping about these issues, and I'm not going to be bad friends with anybody, because we brought it here, because we need to consult all of South Africa through time. Now, there are other models that we have. One of the options that was a very popular option about 12 months ago, before this became formal policy, was that the planning commission consisted of cabinets. There was even bad talk of constructing a super cabinet within cabinets. That is not complex. Another option, and one that we're not far from, is to have this kind of wise people approach. And the third is to have a process internal to government. There are other processes. There are hybrids of all of these. The Indian case would be a case in point. The Indian Planning Commission chair is chaired by the Prime Minister Manmohan Singh. He attends a few meetings a year, and speeches are always published. There is somebody styled the deputy chair who runs it in day job. There are five other cabinet ministers who serve on the planning commission, but then there are very senior public servants and outside academics who come in and form this planning commission. And when they put together, as I said before, a 5-year plan, it seems volumes very, very exhaustive research and proposals that I've been. The risk, of course, of reintroducing the idea of a super cabinet is one of the downsides. And if you take this thing up, I mean, one of the ideas is that you can try and somehow mediate between different interests. I think the notion that even the academics or others from society would not have interests, would not have views, would be completely free of any of their own passions, ideologies, and so on, I think might be a bridge. So we need to find an approach that would work, and to be conscious of just what the risks are. And so it may even be possible and necessary to try and take some kind of hybrid. There's another debate. Certainly, the two business organizations very strong on the idea of representation. Now, I think one of the worst things we can do to planning is to construct whatever the kind of commission is where planning issues are discussed, to convert that into a large bathroom. And the risk of our representatives is that it would tend to construct that, and where you have that, there always are trade-offs that are pertinent to the text it represents, rather than trade-offs that are pertinent to intermediating between the long-term future and the short-term decisions that happen. And on the other hand, the risk, of course, is that experts may not have the necessary political legitimacy. Not suggesting that they're free of interest either. So, and then, you know, a name that has appeared, certainly in the detail of one of the submissions, that suggests that if you have experts, then it's a need. Well, I'm afraid I think it isn't view of that, because I think all of us, whether you are in the executive or in parliament, whether you are in the leadership of the trade union movement, or the leadership of business, or even in the leadership of some of the community organizations representing the body like that, all of us are part of the elite. Very efficient. So, you know, that is up for some names, and we have a finding approach that would be important. The other issue is that would be a skill that we must be able to develop is the ability, Chair, to marshal inputs from outside of this body of people. And so it's worth knowing what research is being done by universities. What research ought to be done by universities is to have a discussion with universities. In the interaction I've had with Vice Chancellors, they say, you need to talk to us about how we can be better at this. There are bridges we have to cross. I was in contact with people in future studies at the University of Oxford recently. And the number of South Africans involved there in a range there. Now, doesn't mean because they're in the diaspora, we can't continue to fall on them with their skills. These become very important questions. But also, we have resources vested in bodies like the CSR, the ADFRC, the National Research Foundation gives grants for research. All of those become very important parts of what we do. And then there are outside think tanks in this country or elsewhere. There is a note, perhaps to brief a note in the Green Paper Chair, that reminds us that the Green, that planning and the Planning Commission is not a panacea for what's wrong with it. The great addition to the instruments we have at our disposal, but we should never lose our humility about this, and there are two kinds of examples that are mentioned where this goes wrong. The first is where the trade-offs are too tough and implementation fails because there's too little passion. And the other is where you have a big consensus. That warm, fuzzy feeling of broad consensus where there aren't any trade-offs. And so you have volumes of documentation that can't actually get you anywhere. It's back to that belief that we could, in 2 years, grow at 10%, be a high wage economy, be a high skill economy, a low carbon emitting economy, that we can't be that in 2 years. The only thing that we need is will. Will goes with grace. Isn't there what goes with grace, so I think we should try to deal with that. We need to talk about this, because certainly from where we sit in chairs, there's a consciousness about how these things can come apart. if we overplay one at the expense of the other. So we ask the committee to help us think through this and see whether it's possible to craft something. We had this battle right in 1994 in the Arts of Kiosk. And everybody's getting bottoms up means different things to different people. But I know on the basis when you go to China and they say, come back, it's bottoms up. Swallow everything in the glass, you can't do it too long. But getting the situation right is fundamentally important. I think what we're saying is the government should be afraid to put ideas on the table and then invite them. But it can't just be a kind of one direction source of ideas. It's getting that situation right, and the slide basically deals with that. But the big challenge is one that I think when we spoke in Parliament about it, we took a view that too often in government, and I'm sure that even opposition parties have noted from portfolio committees, people who are spokespersons, especially now that we have shadow ministers and so on, develop a myopia. You look down, you stare right down. Part of what the planning function has to do is break out those walls so that we understand that the function that we are responsible for finds meaning in a larger world. So we raise that because mitigating those flaws. In terms of the structure, the buy-in, fundamentally important. And then, if you accept that there are these trade-offs, you can't sort of do this in large, is in peace. The balances, I think, are fundamentally important. You must be able to take decisions, but also be in communication on the one hand. On the other hand, it's quite important that we understand that there is a role and a place for all manner of institutions. One of the trade unions, the trade union federation's chair, they didn't make a decision, but I did have a meeting with them. So one of the concerns that they expressed is that the planning would try to plant what NEDLAC does. Planning needs social dialogue, but it can't replace an organized forum for social dialogue such as NEDLAC. And it's very important that we are able to reassure everybody that as we take a look, that it's not quite as representative, we can't supplant NEDLAC. And also for that reason, I think it's fundamentally important that Parliament continues. Chair, the first phase of this is what we don't need. Once the institutions are established, Parliament will have a continuing role to play. People get bored when I say that as a nation we don't have a place in our institutions. Part of what one hopes Parliament will do is to raise the content of what people talk about. I mean, it's very hard to remind ourselves always that what happened through the Codesta negotiations actually raised the profile of what was happening essentially because it meant something to families when they could sit down to a meal they were talking about this issue. But if you look at currently we perhaps after what happened at Orlando Stadium on Saturday, we should get something other than football to talk about. Perhaps the planning issues are going to be very going to be less boring than what we saw on Saturday. You agree with me? But you know, I'm often struck by how little we know. We don't have a baseline of information about the population of South Africa, the age distribution of that population, the rate of urbanization of the population. We don't know, perhaps, Honorable Kwele knows what our carbon emissions are nationally and per capita, but I don't think that anyone. But in most countries, these are the kinds of things that fuel discussion. And part of what Parliament has to do is to help South Africa understand and talk about these things that matter, because we have to reach between the present and the future. The last flood, we had a sort of quick meeting a fortnight ago with the committee. I was called out from that. One of the undertakings I made that I'd like to repeat in this more formal sense is that the reports of this ad hoc committee will be taken very, very seriously. We will take the ideas on board. I think from the bit I've said through the preceding 12 slides or so, it does reflect that we're grappling for answers in some areas and we look to the committee to help us crack. So we will take those issues seriously. We are concerned about the time lag. And so we want to sort of hold out, come back, have another white paper process that may take us, you know, if we come back to Parliament in February, it's budget, it's, you know, I've seen in previous years the Honorable Narendra Singh spent a lot of time at the tailors and at the edges. The first time of the year is like that. You know, there are all of those state of the nation budgets. So. And we don't get through a lot of the hard policy work and so on. So we might actually lose another 6 months. That's the difference. So again, that undertaking and perhaps between your meeting and the NGOP will deal with this and the advantage is that they'll be sitting for a week later, which is why the members of the select committee are here. We should be able to signal that we're taking these matters very, very seriously. So we are looking forward to the positive and very constructive dialogue. But I'm not supposed to say this because I'm supposed to dislike Parliament, but I'm a member. So this pleading for vigilance from Parliament. You know, between that broad agreement that we need along the term and the detail and ensuring that the institutions are right and that the institutions will assist us in meeting our objectives, lies the watchfulness of an institution like Parliament. I want to repeat that in a fair amount of the issues here, we have to kind of get into the river, but then we have to peel out the stones with our feet. But we have to get into the river, and part of what we look forward to Parliament on is the courage to help us get into the water. Thank you.
Thank you.
thank the minister. As I outlined in my opening remark, that today's presentation for yourself is for the committee members to understand your response to the number of submissions that have been made to us and to you through us. Therefore, the engagement is going to be more around clarity-seeking issues, not about agreements or disagreements. So I thought I should just make that comment to guide the discussion for honorable members. Honorable Uwele.
I think I just wanted to preface my problem, my interaction with the minister, by saying, I guess from the side of the ANC in particular, I think what we're very clear about is that we need a development of faith with the strategic capacity, organizational capacity, and technical capacity. It must be in a position to set particular objectives in a long term. And it must have a planning mechanism to ensure that whatever such mission is achieved, and in achieving that vision, the capacity to set strategic objectives, we have done that. Planning mechanism, and the challenge is about, I guess, as we interact, is how to put in place that planning mechanism, which will ensure that all of us kick towards the same part. I guess that is what we're about. And to what extent the input of those who made submissions during the public hearing and what the response of the minister is will actually determine how we succeed to actually put that planning mechanism in place, which is central to ensure that the coherence, coordination, to ensure that we maximize our potential to do better. I don't want to go into details because a number of issues that the minister has raised, one had an opportunity to go through in my email. I just wanted to clarify just one or two issues, minister, that there is an interesting part which I thought you were going to speak about. The relationship between the monitoring and evaluation unit and because every time I think about this, I feel very challenged to understand how possible that at any point in time they will be able to move without one another. In the sense that how you determine, for instance, how you define the kind of impact, outcomes that you want to realize, so that they can be measured and monitored. There is no separation between that and planning, because those outcomes would only make sense if there's interaction between the set of measures and the planning. So how is that being managed? One is very much true. The other issue is, if you look at your institutional arrangement, you have the minister sharing or convening by your president, planning the Interministerial Planning Committee, and also chairing the Planning Commission, and also playing a key role with regard to ensuring interaction between the Planning Commission and the government. My curious question is that Don't you think at times
a noble idea could draw unnecessary negative attention? That isn't there a different way that this could be done? Lastly, there is another controversial issue which I just came across as one of the that has come in ever thought of a situation where if this committee, if the planning commission has been sure that the central plan and everybody making, I accept that there is this sort of, I don't know what crazy has been, where you give the government continuum, which sort of explains the analysis that you are speaking about. That would cater for the problem for these elements. But the point I wanted to make is that someone was saying, how does a colleague, amongst colleagues, ensure that there is an effective compliance with the central process without being reminded that you are one of us, you might have another colleague? Those are just a few questions, but generally, I think your input has actually put us, some of us, in a position to begin looking at what was presented and what your response is to actually move forward then.
I've noted the following, Honorable Member, Honorable Davidson, Honorable Tromit, Honorable Mavaso, Honorable Siswar, you'll follow in that order, and then I'll take the next round. In the composition of the National Planning Commission. You put these options on the table, which diverge somewhat from the initial option, which is a kind of sense of exit, which is the main field of the project. There are now alternative suggestions, one of which is an inequity of character. And I just want to seek clarity on this, because you know, I think it speaks to the seriousness with which we want to take this exercise. And what I'm talking about here is whether we are essentially wanting to come out with a sectoral view or a genuine national vision. Now, if you are talking about the latter, which I hope you are, then indeed would it not speak to giving a broader range of people and tend towards the panel of experts. Of course, recognizing the institutional setup, which obviously speaks to you chairing that and the committee of ministers make input into it and giving political guidance. But what I'm driving at is really the concept of a national vision which encompasses a diverse range of opinions. And it's in that context that, which is a difficult one, which the complex question is, how does one derive a national consensus after that as to what that vision should be? That's the first question. And third, we need to get clarity as far as that is concerned. And whatever model is chosen, what is the mechanism for appointing each of these? Because that's critical, because it can be just to put a crudely, a range of ANC acolytes. And I think we need to be careful about this. But I buy your story about representatives, best people representing particularly industries, because I think that's a problem. The second one that I wanted to get your reaction to is one of the inputs that were made spoke about the conflation of planning and policy making. And I think that has to be answered. Because one of the critiques that came across is that it effectively puts the National Planning Committee in a position gender policy. Well, I was surprised because it has to be, in a sense, and I'm just speaking clarity, because government is a huge institution with many policies sometimes made, not necessarily deliberately, but trying to be move against one another. And as you quite rightly put in your paper, there has to be also some tough traders. And in the policy of, in the process of making them very tough traders, who in a sense are making new policies or new policy decisions. But I think we need to answer that question directly. Because it is a criticism. I don't buy it. But I think it is a criticism that goes to the heart of one of the representations that came before you.
Another one, Colin?
Thank you. I have one question. And that's around the perceived role of Parliament. The Honourable Minister said that Parliament has an important role to play. And apart from contextualising the needs and aspirations of the people that we represent in Parliament, how would the Minister envisage Parliament's role in monitoring whether Cabinet is adhering to the national vision? And you yourself made mention that long-term planning is very difficult because sometimes it can be complicated by short-term electoral goals. And how does Parliament then play an oversight role to ensure that we adhere to that national vision that will be crafted by the Standing Commission and input from the public?
Another one, the last one.
Thanks. Standing Commission. Thanks, Mr. Honourable Minister. I just want to check if my understanding is will be in line with what the minister's understanding is. If I say planning to do what, and then I answer myself and say it is planning to deliver, so that whatever we do, we then say we have a plan, but centrally to deliver. But then, I've noted about three questions here. That how will you propose we balance inviting input to enrich this process? This is a speedy conclusion of the process, because I also want to believe that getting input can be a process that doesn't end. And also, even planning is just like studying for an exam. Is it not that we can easily get to a point where we say, I still want to plan, I still want to plan, I still want to plan? When there's a critical issue there, it's delivered because the plan is an instrument. But the end result, we must be measured on what we deliver using the plan as a tool. Then the last one, the one that last is to what degree, because we have gone through processes of developing policies, you know, in a number of areas when challenged. And sometimes we feel we have developed something ideas. But sometimes we feel we may have made a mistake. But I think we must have come to a point where we say there is no longer room for making mistakes. So it means to what degree can we say international experience has informed us, knowing that our context as South Africa is the key. Which is a point that you have made here, Colleague Minister, that South Africa is South Africa, but we don't regret to say, had we invested more time on studying the incarnation. Then the last would be, how can we invoke the confidence of the people? Because when we said the people shall govern, or the people are governing, we don't have many resources as South Africans, but one of the resources that we have is the people. So that this instrument that we are busy with, we must deliver it to the people, so that the people deliver with the instrument. But they must do so with vigor. So how do we, can we inspire giving instruments? Thanks.
Honorable Swart, followed by Honorable Rasul, and then Honorable Singh, and Khreya. Okay, I think the minister is pleading that. Well, I think because this is probably his last interaction with the committee, before we put a report, we should afford him the opportunity to say much more to us. Over to you.
Can I just, because my question relates to the role of Parliament and the Church.
If you know all questions that are going to follow relate to something.
Okay.
That has been said.
Thank you, Chair. You know, there's a very important connection between one of the questions the Honourable Bloomberg asked and what the Honourable Obasa asked. And in my view, it's one of those questions. As a country, we don't have a single definition of what is the developmental state. Because too often I think that there's a conflation with a state that gives grants to everybody, and we say, well, that's developmental. That, in my view, is antithetical to the developmental state. If you look back in the literature, I mean, go back to Chalmers Johnson, his analysis of Japan's post-war reconstruction, it was largely about the ability to reconstruct and to improve on the living standards of people by involvement of the state in the economy, not only by ownership. I found a very useful definition, which I think is important for the discussion that followed. It's by a man called Amiya Bakhti. He says, let us see what a developmental state means in the era of global spread of capitalism. It is a state that puts economic development as a top priority of government policy and is able to design effective instruments to promote such a goal. The instruments would include the forging of new formal institutions, which is what we're talking about here, the weaving of formal and informal networks of collaboration among the citizens and officials, and the utilization of new opportunities for trade and profitable production. Whether the state governs the market or exploits the opportunities thrown up by the market depends on particularly historical conjunctures. One feature of the successful developmental state is its ability to switch gears from market-directed to state-directed growth or vice versa, depending on geopolitical circumstances, as well as combine both market and state directions in a synergistic manner when opportunity vectors. So we need a definition that is workable. We need a definition that is workable because I think a lot will follow from it. What do we set the price at? If it's economic development, what leads to economic development? What do we then say about the role of human resources development? What is the available evidence between countries that are now converging and lower growth and countries that are falling out? Term that economists are now using that might be more familiar to the Honourable Steve Swart, which is the modified Matthew effect drawn from the book of Matthew the Bible. The rich get richer, the poor get poorer. Why does that happen? What is human capital? How does it inform it? And what is our role in respect to those kinds of issues? And to deal with that, there isn't a narrow separation between policy and long vision. They tell us.
But if the only thing we do is policy, then I'm going to call the Honourable Room rather neoliberal, and he's going to call me as something else. And we're not actually going to understand the meat of the problem. It's about the implementation of policies that are measurably improving the lives of people. And that's what we must lay the basis for. So the maximization of potential is in that area. Of course, the Honourable Mbele is correct that monitoring and evaluation and planning are joined with the team. Or maybe another part of the body is scientists. In many planning instances, these two sit in the same place. Now, the one question that is raised as well is, on what basis does one minister say to another, they're perfectly equal, Jonga, we are more with. On what basis do you deal with that? And usually, our colleagues in performance monitoring and evaluation are actually developing a set of measurables now. So we say to DEI, don't tell me about industrial policy. Give me a unit. Tell me how many jobs, by the way. You say the same to education. How do you affect changes? You may take the Millennium Development Goals in health, look at infant mortality or maternal mortality, and work back from it to the lived experience. It's about getting those kinds of things right. Then people know what you're actually working towards. It's not just some vague and general notion about the happy future that we will share. It helps when somebody else is putting it on the table. Because between that line of sight that you have to the long vision, you must be able to adjust. And if things are not right and you have to resequence, then it's up to the other agency of monitoring and evaluation actually drawing a firm attention to that. And that's how you construct the compliance that we need. The Uncle Ian Davis asks about the composition, and it's a tough call. I really don't think that you can take this view of mutual exclusions between the authority to be heard and the complete independence. Some of the things I've done along the line include the scenario planning. And one of the experiences I take with me, and we're having a discussion with some of the people involved in genome cancer treatment, is you actually need diverse views to be able to spark discussion and broaden the consensus. That's how it works. One because of that size of everybody, whether that be in terms of experience, ideology, whatever, actually fails the process. And there's a risk, there always is a risk, but I think we must be bold to take the risk. And that, I think, is how you bring national vision into play. But having said that, there's one thing that I know, and that is that a large cross-section of policymakers are actually in agreement about a whole range of issues in this country. I think what separates us is smaller than what holds us together. And, you know, I'll go down the intellectual for saying that, but I'll say it time and again that what holds us together across the floor of Parliament, what holds us together, the kind of vision. Partly because the preamble to the Constitution doesn't give you an escape route. And I'd like somebody to get up and say, forget about the past, forget about righting the wrongs of the past, but
forget about creating equality for all South Africans before the law. That's not our business. I'd like somebody to say that and think that they will make progress anywhere in the politics of South Africa. And if we understand that, then I think this platform is broken. Then what happens at the edges, you know? When the Honorable Mabaso wants to nationalize David's wealth or whatever, you know, those things you can deal with. So, on the mechanism for appointments, again, I think it'll largely depend on the institution that we agree upon. But ultimately, there must be a pool that's bigger than the circle of friends that I have or the president has. That's what we need to do. And we don't know those people. We're going to have to sit with them. On the conflation of planning and policy making, I'm saying that's a risk. That's a risk that you can try and predetermine issues, be conscious of it, and know that there are other people whose job it is to take responsibility for policy making. Out of all of the things we do, perhaps the biggest risk for me, is the fact that I was Minister of Finance for so long, and the tendency to think that I know everything about budgeting and the Minister of Finance doesn't have a role to play in this regard has to be absurd in itself. It's trying to define the role and the limits, but understanding that these limits also need to construct a platform for articulation between different responsibilities. And the greater the consciousness about the risks, I think the better we become. Yeah. Part of the challenge is that in making the trade-offs, you run the risk of getting too close. Or limiting the policy choice that others have. And I think the greater the awareness, and I go back to the example. I go back to the example of education. Somehow you need to think differently and understand the linkage between the formation of human capital. Not as an after-school exercise, but through all of the lives of people, so that education is a lifelong experience for more people. And lifelong, not just for those who kind of dropped out of school or so, but lifelong being continuous so that it begins to resonate. But in understanding the link between that and economic development, and there's sufficient evidence on this now, I think that the planning function needs to be careful of the fact that you've got ministers for both basic education and higher education, and you can't just cut through the issues that they deal with on a daily basis. You need a very high level of consciousness, and I think the sensitivity to these kinds of issues. Otherwise, you ruin the team. The question that the Honourable Admiral Trollope raised about the perceived role of Parliament, at one level I think it's open ended. I truly believe that we don't use Parliament adequately. When I look at what happens in committees in Parliament elsewhere in the world and the amount of time they have at their disposal, I often wonder why we aren't doing the same things. Why we aren't taking more of the inquiry to the Parliament. Should the Parliament Chair have an inquiry into what is happening in the economy? Banking or non-banking financial services. Should the Parliament have a role? Is it the few members who gather for the Portfolio Committee in Finance? And it can't be because our parliamentarians are intellectually lesser endowed. We need to, I think, transform the way we function as well. Which is why I think that while in getting the, you know, what the Mosuleki Commission called so repeatedly, trias politica, right? Separation of power and right? If you're too close, then the oversight is likely to diminish. But again, it's something we have to put on the table and ask the Parliament. How can Parliament be a more important vehicle for raising the issue, raising the quality of discussion and debate across the country? Now, in respect of the Honourable Mabaso, planning to deliver, yes, but I think that a lot of the deliveries are actually line function and less, what's the term we use? Lateral. Transversal is the term we use. Transversal. Because the delivery, you know, if you want to deliver education, then you need a very hands-on feel. You must have detailed policy of what teachers do in the class. You must have some oversight over the curriculum development. You must be able to, you know, do those kinds of things, which is what planning is. You say that there's no longer room for making mistakes, and yes, it's rare. But also, if you fear making mistakes, then you won't actually take any progress. On invoking the confidence of the people, that's important to say. Which is why I think that if you are... The big advantage that sits in my head, certainly about the religion issue, is the more you get people talking about it, the greater their confidence. I think we who live with policy every day, we deal with our phobias about this. And part of our responsibility is to help people gain their confidence. It's not a trick, it's fundamentally important. Once it's there, then you have a basis for dealing with some of the hard numbers. But you need to know what people want. Don't ever presume that you have all the answers simply because we sit in Parliament or because we are ministers. And that, I think, becomes fundamentally important going forward. And then, if the objective is clear, this developmental state, however we define it, defining it is important. You then, you deepen that confidence and you construct a better problem. So, Chair, let me stop there, because I'd hate to prove Ibrahim Rasool profound. I'd hate to prove that.
Just some logistical announcement that members of the committee should not worry about transport, both the select committee and the other committee. Everything has been arranged. So I just wanted you to relax on that part. This will be followed by Rasul, Singh, Trailing, and Memchuan.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Minister, thank you. I think you have covered to a degree what I was going to ask, but I think first of all, you operate in saying there's more holding us together than what we disagree on. And I think that's what we've got great promise for this process as you go forward. I'm just trying to get my mind around the institutional issues and the time that we are required. I think I'm having a difficulty with the time. And I do appreciate your urgency. I asked Lewis, and I think you've had 18 months or something, or is that correct, that you've been dealing with the issues? But for us, it's been a few weeks, and to come up with a comprehensive report in such short time is a challenge. The next step, obviously, once we've given the green light or whatever, what role does Parliament then play? How do you see that? And clearly you indicate it's open-ended. In the process of developing the plan, of what model are you going to have? Are you going to have the wise men who are going to be inside? Are they going to develop the plan? I see in your slideshow you say Parliament has an important role in facilitating broad input and engagement to inform the plan. So it seems that there's a greater role that we are going to be playing in actually formulation of the plan. And I also see in terms of the green paper that you were hoping to finalise the process in a year, which is understandable considering the challenges that we've got as a nation. It seems therefore that we are going to be playing a far greater role in not only the monitoring afterwards, but also in engaging in the public and the formulation of the plan as well. And is that your sense? Would you see a select committee on, or a standing committee on the whole process? And that might be a way to go forward, that when we engage in broader issues, have the type of inquiries that you are thinking about, cross-cutting as you take this process forward. And it's an exciting process to engage with. And thank you for your practice in saying there's a lot of issues that you haven't got along. And I think we can engage on that going forward as to the role of Parliament. I think there are obviously challenges on all of us work-wise, but I think it is an exciting cross-cutting issue that one can continue to engage on. Just as far as you've got, specifically, you've got a base 5-year medium-term strategic framework in place at the moment that is annually reviewable. One obviously accepts that such a long-term plan will also be reviewable on an ongoing basis, where environment changes, where situations change, you might have a global recession again or upswing. So that, to me, is also an issue that I'd like you just to comment on, the ongoing nature of this long-term plan that could be reviewed and could change as well. Thank you.
Thank you much, Chairperson. Chairperson, just two or three issues that I want to raise. The one is that in response to COSATU's submission on the green paper, particularly in the second paragraph, and I'll just repeat it for the Minister's benefit, it says the NDC should not only be conceptualized in terms of what we're supposed to do, it should also be conceptualized within the concrete institutional context within which it is supposed to operate. Unquote. My question to COSATU on the basis of that was whether they were pleading for more of the same. When, on the one hand, there is a critique that things are not working well, and on the other hand, in conceptualizing the vehicle to take us forward, we ask for more of the same. The reason I raise that is because looking at the slideshow that the Minister presented today, and I'm looking particularly on page 5, it's probably trying to assuage or to comfort a concern such as saying we're all equal, there's only a coordinating role, the presidency only manages government, and so forth, and dropping words like leading and so forth, whether we are not laying the table for more of the same. Because I think that while some may see hierarchy, should we not be actively debating differentiation in tasks? For example, should the Green Paper not be speaking a lot more about what line function departments and ministers do as specific planning, rather than keeping planning up in the air, open to all, free for all, etc.? What clusters do are probably far more sectoral planning around infrastructure, this, that, and the other. And what the Cabinet Committee on Planning, with the help of NDC or whatever it may be, is to develop integrated comprehensive planning and begin to stipulate the dialectical relation between, because you can't do a specific plan in the absence of an overall vision and vice versa. So I thought that and vice versa, meaning that you can't also put together a comprehensive integrated plan if you don't also know what some of the more specific ones are about and the technical ones and so forth. So I thought that that is one area that may get us out of the logjam and beyond suspicion without necessarily laying the table for more of the same. The other thing is that I think, I'm not sure if from slide 7 onwards or page 7 onwards, we are directly or completely dealing with the issue of the difference between vision, plan, and policy and all of those kind of things. I think that we should not probably, it's difficult to close the book on policy, but should we not be able to compile what is the policy that we have been able to, and where we need revision, where we need addition, where we need this, that, and the other, in order to get it out of the way so that one can comfortably get on with issues of planning, and that planning becomes about choices made, sequencing, resourcing, capacitating, implementing, and all of those kind of things, because I think that it helps us then to hopefully between the two, to be able to differentiate functions and all of those kind of things. Otherwise, I suspect, just from having sat through some of the public hearings on this, that I think we may not be able to overcome some of the logjam within. But I thought that those were just two points that I wanted to raise that I think wasn't necessarily giving comfort from the input that we've had.
Honorable Singh, followed by Honorable Kreiner, and then Mamsa.
Thank you very much, Jefferson, and thank you to the Minister and his team. I think this has been a very useful exercise in clarifying a number of issues. And having listened intently to all the presentations that were made to us as a committee, there's certainly broad consensus that everybody wants to keep in touch. We're all on the same page. Sometimes I'm on line 5 and somebody else is on line 8 and somebody else is on line 2. But I just want to ask the Minister for a comment on, you said that we might risk losing 6 months. You spoke about the white paper. Now, in many of the presentations, there was talk of a white paper. Now, whether you call it a white paper or whatever paper, don't you think, Minister, that there is need, following on this green paper, which was tabled in the form that it was, and given the fact that there have been some grey areas in terminology, and then you quite clearly said there's going to be no super cabinet, there's going to be no super ministry, cabinet is going to be responsible, etc. But when one looks at the document on one page, you'll see Minister and Presidency for National Planning. In another page, you'll see Minister for National Planning, and those kinds of contradictions on all these things. And that's the one example. And the other one is the options. Now, today you table before us on page 9. Several models of cabinet policies. Now, the green paper doesn't tease out those options. It's a little more straightjacketed than what cabinet considers. And what I'm saying is, what would your view be in post the presentation of the report by the Senate Committee to Parliament, that the Ministry and the Presidency or the President himself look at another document which will clarify the issue? And then we take matters forward from there. And looking at the seriousness with which this committee, I think, has conducted its business, I think you won't find this committee failing in its resolve to make sure that we act as speedily as possible, so that planning, proper planning, leads to good service delivery. The other point I want to make, Minister, is during the presentation, one of the presenters of a certain group indicated that they have responded to the invitation of the ad hoc committee to make presentations. But there are other discussions taking place in other fora outside of the ad hoc committee. Now, are you aware of any other discussions that are taking place, and how would that influence or impact the content of this green paper as we move forward? Thank you.
I think the first thing to recognize, I mean, this is obviously new to all of us, and they all grabbed it. I think the first thing that we should recognize, and obviously there's a lot of discussion happening outside of this forum as well, and we see it in the media. The first thing to recognize is the main minister, is that you've actually produced a green paper on this. In fact, all the other new ministries haven't produced a green paper. And so the kind of debate that we're having over this ministry, we're not having over the other ministries. And I think that's just making the task a little bit more difficult, because you're trying to clarify the role. But in a sense, I mean, we've had some submissions on other ministries, but that hasn't been fully debated and fully characterized either. So let me try and deal with the elephant in the room, because this is the kind of number that, as far as I know, in terms of how do you see the difference between the planning ministry or the National Planning Commission and the role of the Economic Development Ministry? And I think that this is something that we need to tackle head on, because this is obviously something that has really been debated in the press, but that I think we need to really clarify here. I know it's a bit unfair to ask you to clarify that from your side, but I think we do need to do that. Because also a statement was made within the Kotatu submission that what is planning but economic development planning? And I don't necessarily agree with that, but I'm interested in your views on that. Does planning encompass more than simply economic development planning? I think it would. I think that it would actually look beyond the simple economy. It would actually look at resources and look at some of our constraints in terms of natural resources, human resources, and financial resources, which would sometimes go beyond the ambit of simple economic development plan. But I think it is an issue that we would like some clarity from you on as to how you see those three different ministries. And then I think that, you know, the one thing that there seems to be agreement on in the submission between both business and labour is that they wanted a longer process, they wanted a legislative process. They wanted to see the white paper, and then they wanted to see legislation coming out of it so that we could institutionally embed this particular commission. Now, I have sympathy with that, but I also have sympathy with the fact that we really need to get this up and running as fast as possible. I think there's enormous decisions that are needing to be made right now in the next year or so, which require some kind of planning commission as a framework to guide some of those decisions. So I'm just wondering if you can think of a kind of compromise that we can find as a committee as to how do we institutionally embed this for posterity, and at the same time move with haste to get this thing set up as soon as possible. And then just in terms of approach, I think we should also separate out various aspects of the planning commission. The one is the generation of the vision, and I think that the vision needs to be a completely all-inclusive process. I think that mustn't be formulated simply by the National Planning Commission or the commissioners. This needs to be an all-inclusive process. And in the process of generating that vision, we also need to identify the constraints in terms of reaching that vision. And that's the whole country needs to be involved in. I think that we all need to buy into that. But once that vision's been developed, then the plan needs to be developed as to how we achieve that vision. And I think that's where the kind of role, so to speak, of experts in that come in terms of looking at that. And then that can be debated once they've developed those plans. But I think, and that obviously also then needs to interrogate the current plan of various departments to ask some very tough questions about whether we are able to achieve the vision that we've all set for ourselves, given the kind of current planning in current departments now. I mean, I think that's the iterative process really needs to occur going forward. And I'll leave it there.
That's true, because
Citizens, thank you once again. And I want to thank the Minister for coming up with a career going through the input that were given by all the then needs to address something which I think cannot be ignored by this particular question. That too many people in South Africa remain unemployed. And I believe that is one of the things that will unite all of us together, no matter which type of work we are coming from. Noting that there is need for this employment and that government has to do something about it. I want to check with this policy when the minister said, if we cannot talk of time frames, because there are times when we can afford to have savings, but we are talking of changing this country, like we are talking of a development state, and if we have to answer a question which has to do with economic implications being necessary, then we are talking of a development state. It's necessary to come up with jobs. My proposal then, or question is it possible for us to come up with things? I understand that we want everything put in there from the newspaper to the white paper and what have you. But then if we are extremely serious and are aware of the danger of not taking care of the question of unemployment, perhaps we talk of maybe waiting even over the weekend. And I know that is a very serious and unfortunate statement to be made, but can we look into that? Because if you want to do something about this, it's like being a man, you talk of a child who wants to walk, and this child is so afraid of falling. As you walk, you fall and hurt yourself. A lot of things have been said. We listen to all the issues that came in, but this man is weak. Therefore, like somebody who needs to stand up and do something about it, we need to do something. Definitely. The question is, are we prepared to come up with something that will make us maybe satisfy everybody who wanted to satisfy? That is not possible.
Thanks, Chair. Minister, your presentation has brought some thought-provoking things. It is said that the Green Paper says that the process of the National Planning Commission will be comprised of external stakeholders who in turn must advise government. And these external stakeholders, the Green Paper mentioned that it's academic, respectful thinkers, and the business, while the business came to make presentations, they also wanted to be included in those external stakeholders. And yes, the Green Paper also acknowledges that these respectable thinkers lack political legitimacy. Yet, at the very same time, we say that we raise the national vision politically. Yet, we say, yes, the Green Paper proposes that these respectable thinkers will be the ones that will be taking our vision, our long-term vision, forward. And there was also something that was mentioned by the Honorable the DA, I promise, that, you know, this the long-term vision should not in the process be hindered by our own party political vision that would drive the electorate to understand or to know that we want to deliver. Yet at the very same time, this Green Paper sort of excludes the electorate. You know, I agree that planning cannot be something that can be taken through individuals, and people must have a buy-in this our own political parties. Yet we want to now want to exclude the electorate and people who are elected and outsource this section to experts who will reside in the office of the presidency and will be headed by the minister in the planning commission. That's why I say that this presentation brings about lots of thought-provoking issues to me, which I would want the minister to clarify. Thank you.
Over to the minister.
Thank you, Chair. Let me just start by raising a few universal truths that would expand a lot of what has been raised here, that also alludes to the nature of the challenge before us. The first one is the old adage, everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die. Somehow you have to take a decision. You can't remain in limbo. So that's the first issue I put on the table. The second issue, and this is apropos what Ivan Basur was raised in the article, be careful what you wish for. You know, I learned at about 2:30 on the morning of the 10th of May that the President would ask me to take responsibility for it. We don't tell the point. I mean, I said before, and it's worth repeating, that it would have been far better said if this thing were the discussion I had with dispassionately and I was out of the equation, then people could look at issues, and unfortunately, I mean, you know, people's judgment is clouded. But we don't show the point. As a former Premier, you know that your energy is going to say the same thing. And so that's something that we need to understand. It's more complex in the environment where you have to define the role of the responsibility. It's not like you're walking into something that is already ready. The last issue, and I think it's going to be important for the planning function, it does avoid dealing with tough issues. And I want to draw an experience here.
When I came into government first, I was bright-eyed, bushy-tailed.
And
that's
it. And one of the things we did, I mean, if you look at the period preceding that, by 1992, we had a document that emerged from a conference called Ready to Govern. By 1993, we drafted something called the Reconstruction Development Program. In between, we ran a big macroeconomic research project called MERV. It was all part of this getting ready. There was an unbelievably difficult issue. We said in chapter one of the RDP, the macroeconomic balances are part of the problem, and government will have to correct it. Go check your copy of the RDP. It's available online as well. Check it. And it went into, it said, debt to GNP, not GDP, the deficit to GNP. It described what the nation
and the current account of the budget says these are the problems. We said in chapter 5 of the same article, we said that, you know, the chapter was entitled Implementing the RDP, and there was a gap that was meant to look at these macroeconomic imbalances and how you were going to find resources to finance it, because the idea that you would finance an entire RDP out of a post-apartheid defense dividend was just not going to work. You had to look at the macroeconomic. But rushing this thing before an election, and, you know, in these heavy days, we all went to San Francisco with flowers in our hair like that. Nobody actually took the trouble, and when we actually went to complete the job, it created political difficulties, because the trade-offs always have to be there, and that's where the hard issue. I want to make these points precisely because Islamic thing is not about Chairman Manuel. I want to emphasize it. Take me out of the equation, even if I'm not here. The arguments about the planning function remain important. The trade-off issues are important. And how you construct those things so that it becomes affordable for the country and we don't sell ourselves short. And assume this voluntarism, a million hours, when, how would you pay for it? What policies will undergird it? Nothing. Each one of us is South African. We were part of the destruction of apartheid. We have the privilege of also being part of the construction of the post-apartheid South Africa. These are the experiences that next generations will learn from. Now, I say this to the answer to what I learned about the task I would be assigned after the inauguration of the prison. Though the talk had been out. So the problem is that we've got to take the plan to country. We can do that. I think one of the worst things in him is that bad habits take root. The myopia, the failure to consult, the failure to go back and look at the Constitution, those kinds of things they do. Which is why I'm afraid, I am saying that there's a bit of urgency. We're going to make mistakes, I'm not afraid to make mistakes, but, you know, if you have a process that's honest and transparent, and you can talk into an environment that Parliament offers, then I think you minimize those, because the spotlight compels you to try and conduct yourself correctly. You're right, the medium-term strategic framework will be reviewed, and what this plan is there. But the plan needs a longer vision, actually. And, Honorable Makubela, it's not about excluding the electorate, because I certainly believe you need those. If you were to ask anybody, what do you want for yourself and your children, the nation, they are very basic issues to respond. And how do we get to put that together? What do you sacrifice to get there? Now, I think we can work through these issues. There's another dimension which I think must undergird all of the questions that the Honourable Prime Minister will ask, and that is, there's a dimension without which you can't go. Now he's gone. Person. And that is the issue of trust. And trust is very important in governments, and there's an element of risk in that. He asked what the line functions do, what the clusters do, and what the planning commission does. And I think in an ideal world, Your planning function plays ahead of the day-to-day decision. Go back, the last time we were together, I referred to what Galbraith was saying about it. He talked about taking notice of what you must do for resource allocation. But the resource allocation is something that's in other hands, and that drives day-to-day. You kick into play here the monitoring and evaluation, you feed off of them, you adjust the rules. Which ought to take us out of play and not set us up in competition with mind function. It's a kind of prompt to action, but it shouldn't set us up in competition. If the purpose were working better, then they would be able to look at these issues in a kind of integrated way. But they don't always work for that. By way of self-criticism, we've said that the question, we've had a cluster called social. It's got a new name now. But under the social cluster, you should actually have drilled through and get people to report on these things that the Honourable Bloomberg has asked about earlier. In education, can you explain your response to Timmins or Pearls, these international tests that they do at various grades? You must be able to explain that in this outcomes-based education responding to best equipping young students. You don't do that. So you kind of live in a world of broad agreement without getting to the middle of it. I mean, I've even seen in the press that I've been smacked down because I'm not in the economic cluster. If there were registered available in cluster meetings, people would see. I haven't attended a single meeting of the economic cluster. Not once. But I read in the Financial Times yesterday that all may meet him, as we learned from that. How bad life is for him now. Garbage. You know, the clusters have a kind of coordinated function, and, you know, there's an assignment of one or two ministers. Now a minister who chairs it and a deputy, the economic cluster, a minister in Quincy, deputized by Minister Pando. But, you know, if you set these things up as power bases in your head and you no longer have it, then you begin to believe that you know, the world has fallen down. And then you spin. And those ones at the back there buy all of this spin. They think in the box, they buy the spin. Crap! Oh, sorry, I don't know, it's not fun to mention. So the life function responsibility is a very important, the monitoring and evaluation, and perhaps you have different tools to improve on the quality of collegiality. The issue of policy, I mean, you know, I think it will always be there. How you impart policy, at what point you say, all right, this is now beyond the vision stuff. Let's get down to the nitty-gritty. That will remain in play. The Honourable Singh asked firstly about the white paper. The big challenge that I want to respond to again is, can you tie and shorten the process? You know, let me digress. I saw on television the other day the Indian Minister of State for External Affairs being questioned, and he was questioned about the risk of war between Pakistan and India. And I was rather struck by the force of his response. He said, look, since 1947 there's been the following border conflicts. They've always been on Indian territory. The events of what we now call 2611 or something like that, the attack on Taj and the old royal cult, was engineered out of Pakistan and Indian soil and so on. But having said all of that, since we have 243 million people, these were the terms used, between the poverty line and the funeral plan. In those circumstances, war is a luxury. We can't be taken in by that. Our primary responsibility is to deal with the quality of life of the poorest people in India. I thought it was a very forceful between the person who was a funeral pyre and the poverty. I mean, it's a scary kind of thought, but I think visually it's a very strong image of evokes. How much time are we going to sit around trying to get through this, when in fact the measure is in the lives of people? And that calls for a different kind of conflict. And I hope we can kind of understand the contradiction, but be able to get on with the show. In respect of the institutional arrangement, let me repeat, if it wasn't clear, I come with a view, and what's quite important, Chair, is in styling a green paper, what happens is you have a consultation in heaven. There may be a series, in this case, I mean, there were hours and hours and hours of discussion. And then you, in fact, before we got to cabinet, we took it to another forum of the ruling party, quite bluntly. Debated, got to cabinet, debated, some changes proposed, debated, and then cabinet says, all right, Julie. It's not, if you look at the press statement, it's not cabinet today adopted the green paper, now goes in post. It's fundamentally a consultation. The white paper would have to have the strongest stance in cabinet, which is why I'm saying that the consultation, if in the mind of this committee, and the select committee in the NCSC when it deals with matter. Parliament would like to say to cabinet, you came with this idea that the minister must chair all of these things. We fundamentally disagree for the following reason. You came with this idea that the NPC must be out, be made up of outsiders. We fundamentally disagree, these are our reasons. In good conscience, and in the light of the discussions we had 2 weeks ago or so, my responsibility is to take that back into cabinet and say, look, unlike the amount of time you've given, here you've had Parliament considering this matter for a long period of time. These are the recommendations. How will we take it forward? That is what I think. I'm sure that on an afternoon like this, each one of us has better things to do than to sit in this room if this were just to occupy a minute. The Honourable Mark Craven asked a number of difficult questions. Mm-hmm.
I think they should smile. But I mean, you make the point that we've taken this room. It's a point that I've taken in terms of more feedback. I want to repeat that hopefully we're out of place of line functions. And sometimes we delay. I had a very interesting chat to this man in church, which Michael spent the other day. He's Canadian, and he said, you know the interesting thing about the National Health Insurance in Canada? It was introduced very quickly. I said, what do you mean very quickly? He said, well, the Prime Minister wants to. He went to the province and said, if you prepare to take this route to improve the health care of Canada, then we will finance you halfway. And within months, every province had it. And then it became national. So sometimes the more you protect the tough decisions, the harder you actually make it for yourself. Honorable Mushwana, I'm not talking about the National Health Insurance. I'm talking about the planning. You can protect it, you know. The perfect will become the enemy of the good. Push us into the waters we can't get in. I want to go back to something. I mean, you talk about the unemployment challenge. The question is how we understand the people who can't get jobs. And the people who've never had a chance. I think what they're distributing there is something I said about this planning function at Brits last week. And the story, you see, there's this analysis that they do. It's convergence theory, and they try to understand why the growth in some countries convergent and in other countries diverging. Now South Africa is an interesting case because we are classified as an upper middle income country. But the truth of the matter is that given the levels of underdevelopment in South Africa, for the majority of South Africans, we actually are very poor. Now, one of the issues that arises, you know, what analysis has shown is the thing that makes poor countries not converge with wealthier countries is the skills amongst people, the human capital. It's this thing I was talking about earlier called the modified matching effect. And if you want growth, don't look at growth, you might have to look at education. You might even have to not just say education, but what kind of education. Now, in terms of the planning function, very interesting story from South Korea. The country wanted industrial development, but understood that there are few matters. Now, fortunately, unfortunately, they had a military regime led by General Park. And they then instructed teachers with math and science to teach 2 shifts a day, 6 days a week, so that they could reach more levels. And out of that, they were able to produce a much bigger cadre of math and science. Then it became easier. 10 or 7 years later, because you then start reaping the benefits, and there were teachers available. And then they could invest in bigger science faculties at universities, better R&D, and you've been able to produce Samsung, LG, etc.
But the investment wasn't made just in LG and Samsung and Hyundai and those things. The investment was actually made in the teaching of mathematics. Understanding these linkages becomes fundamentally important for driving change. Because if it's just job, you know, I think that one of the challenges for us is to think beyond expanded public works programs, to think in terms of real jobs. And the big reason why we have to do that, Chair, there may be exceptions in this room, but the truth about poverty is it continues from one generation to the next. Intergenerational poverty is the biggest challenge. That's where I think the shadow is. That is where the intervention must be. That is what we must seek to change. It's not that some are destined to be the viewers of who draws water or the karma is just like that. It's about trying to intervene to create opportunities that are different. And it's not just going to school, it's about thinking about issues that must take place in front of. If the trigger is there for that, then you must then say to Minister Mucheka, what does basic education do to drive the change? And if he is clear about that, he's got to send to the teacher union and say, what are you doing about it? And understand the gap in school government and fix that. When I saw that a particular business organization says, but this excludes us, I worried whether they can think but they don't have respectability, or they have respectability but can't think. Why do they think that this was meant to exclude? Because they said that this excludes them. You know, the key issue is, I mean, there's a different point that was made here about the fact that you don't want these respectful ladies and gentlemen sitting at the computer screen, pouring through tons of documents and saying, well, now you've got climate change. It's not a place for active or retired university professors. You need a divergent range of skills to make it work. But the key requirement that you'll be looking for is the ability to kind of know who's doing what, draw that, and be able to put those issues together. That is, if you choose only an external. If you choose a hybrid, then some of those people would still be. She said there's a risk that you might exclude the electorate. Honourable Mabuvela, I'm responding to you. She said there's a risk that you might exclude the electorate. And I think that if you're high-handed about these things, then of course you exclude the electorate. Or you create a perception that you exclude the electorate. We have a variety of ways and means of talking to people. And it, you know, early in Parliament we won the party of the late Johann Patrick Solomon. And one of the interesting stories, I think Brad, you told me, was in the weeks before from the time that the hotline was launched, his family, his brother, had phoned the hotline. And so when Imam breathed his last breath. The action knew exactly what the state of play was with the land claim, because there was direct communication. The elected assembly excluded the means of it. There are going to be many other stories like that. I'm saying, finally, that I don't want to suggest that the committee must go with this. I repeat, this was our best chance. Once you pass the preface and you agree that you need a long-term perspective. The first sentence in the introduction says, "Drink makes the consultation document setting out a proposed policy position. In this case, the position of national government and planning and decision." That's the point. It's consultation. And I want to repeat that, Chair, in the time we've been here, we could have done many things on this wonderful. I mean, it's been so cold in Cape Town for so long. Today is a wonderful day, and we choose to be there. If we didn't respect each other and respect the outcome of the process, I don't think we would have actually opted. I think what I'm trying to say is that we recognize that is a major thing that we must achieve. But in pursuit of that major thing to achieve, we are more than one. Because we are more than one, we have to agree how to get natural and different roles to play. But in those zones, there will be policy development, there will be strategic and operational management. There will be resource allocation, there will be transnational organization. But who plays what role at any stage will be determined by the nature of the common framework of play. In other words, there is no one, in my view, in this sort of process who is denied. But self-doubt is that, can we work in a coordinated fashion to make it happen? It's like this issue of separate. The third thing which we need, maybe we will go to question, to deal with this very limited and rigid definition of policy making.
So this one becomes very simple. You don't need to define policy as a cost of action. And it doesn't go beyond that. Simple cost of action. And in anything that you do, you will have to have a cost of action. Whether you are planning, it doesn't matter what you do, whether you're planning, there's policy making in the process. There's execution in the process. There's thinking, there's coordination. As long as there is, you will not run away from green policy. You will not run away from implementation. You will not run away from theorizing. The point of life is that it is what is most important that I think we need to talk about.
Yeah.
Thank you. Sorry. I wanted to say that the last point, let's keep issues of the community.
Okay,
oh, no, can you say that? This is not issue of the committee.
Yeah.
No. Okay. The one I'm coming to now.
Okay.
Thank you. Sorry, Jacob. For I take your advice. But the other issue is, I'm not sure if the minister has spoken to this matter, because we've been here for some time. One of the challenges, if you talk about long-term planning, is the need for product support. Sometimes, across the ideology of the core. There's an element of that long-term plan that must enjoy non-partisan protocol support for it to be guaranteed a long-term life. Not all of it, but sections. I'm not sure that is naturally attended to. I thank you.
I think part of what the Honourable Brother is coming from. Because he was also, in fact, answering a question that had arisen earlier. Both from the Honourable Singh and the Honourable Davis. Because this iteration between the immediate and the future. On page 12, under that third section, planning means translating policies into long, medium, and short-term objectives, prioritizing the objectives and seeking to implementation. Now, if it ties to Member Schwann's issue, we may feel about it to answer the question properly. Will we by 2014 have half unemployment?
I'm saying it may be about.
But it's not an objective that you give up. But by the next election in 2019, you can't give the same excuses as you've done now. I go back and say full employment is the objective. How do you construct the timeline and the interventions to get there? And if you want to change education, what do you give up in order to get what you want? Because these are the trade-offs. The president said the other day, and he said it to school principals, that in formal Model C schools and private schools, teaching time is 6.8 hours a day. And in township schools and rural schools, it's 3.5 hours a day. And he says to principals, you are perpetuating apartheid. You don't need legislation, but you are perpetuating apartheid. It's a very telling indictment. But this point I was raising earlier here about intergenerational poverty is allowed to continue in that way. Partly because parents feel that they are too poorly educated to engage in well-educated teachers. So school government doesn't work for the poor, send their children to school. If you want to fix it, what are the trade-offs in order to get there? Because mere continuation and saying in the Labour Act and so on and so doesn't intervene. How do you begin to change? How do you involve the election? Because even if the Minister of Finance were to be able to afford to treble the allocation for education next year, doesn't change. What other things do you factor in there? Chair, let me say that if you do a comparative analysis of education salaries in South Africa versus other parts of the world, with GDP converted to purchasing power parity, for the first 10 years of an educated working life in this country is at a higher pay than almost any other country. And beyond that, education departments seek to remunerate them to remain with our for 10 years. So it's not a money thing. What right? It's cracking this kind of thing that begins to open the door for Minister Andrew Mochera and the 9 MECs for education to be able to start the change. It's bringing these things together because, you know, we can't just sit in our hands and say, our boys are, you know, our children are not passing in school. See how few emerge with math of a higher grade. See how few emerge with university exemption, our boys. That's not going to solve the problem. This change requires quite a different mindset. We don't have the military junta, we don't have General Park who can instruct teachers out to get it. But how do you deal with it? I turn to policymakers and say, that's the kind of issue that Simon's put. It's understanding the reality and understanding that this is not where we want to be, and then taking those actions that would be able to defend the change. I really thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister. Maybe before I make a concluding remark, let me just revisit an item that I forgot to deal with earlier on. We received an apology from Honorable Pastor Mashiro, who had asked me to make won't be able to make it, but to make sure that his party is represented to the lap to be intended. Also, just to say, on the side of Parliament here, Honorable Members belong to different committees here in Parliament. I chair Finance Committee, as you know. But I must say, the extent to which this Honorable Members have taken the task of the conversation for this task that has been given to us, amazing. High level of discipline that I have seen so far. And I think it should also give confidence to all the stakeholders who have made both the election and the commission, that the committee would seriously entertain and consider their submission in such a way that we make their voices heard and strike a balance in ensuring that government is able to deliver services to their citizens. Page 3 and page 4 of your slides, they basically summarize areas of convergence in terms of what I think the committee can deal with
what is now left with the detail moving forward. One, it clarifies what is the purpose of this discussion document. It is a consultative process. On page 3, bullet point 1. And Parliament also a conduit that is supposed to facilitate maximum participation of the stakeholders and the public in setting up an institution that is going to be tasked with the responsibilities of changing the lives of ordinary people in South Africa and therefore claiming. On page 4, I think all the submissions concur on bullet point number 1. We haven't come across anybody who says planning is not important for the country. In fact, I think it's a general outcry that we've been waiting for this kind of intervention, and therefore Parliament assists us, as Cabinet has afforded you the opportunity to consult with us to make an input in this process. The issue of policy, planning, interrelationships, and so on and so forth, I think those are matters that the committee on its own should try to elaborate more on what we think needs to happen. But I think you've also placed before us, like all others, presenters, that we cannot remain neutral as if we've got no ideas, we've just received input and therefore we've got nothing to do as Parliament. I think it is very, very clear to all of us as committee members here that as we draft our report, we should be able to give guidance and have an opinion and advice to the Executive Council and to everybody else. So I thought I should make this point very, very clear. I know for time constraints and so on and so forth, but we will try that every minute to ensure that we can't continue to allow government to explain to people out there that we are too busy putting together structures. In fact, our people expect government to function now. They don't expect us to be explaining that we are putting together a training commission. We are putting together this and that. This is what they expect to be in place so that services can reach their doorstep. I would therefore like to thank everybody, in particular yourself and the team and committee members and media members of the media here, that we have done extremely well for the team. What is now left is for us, the committee, to go into our final draft. Finally, a final report for Parliament. Minister, I realize that each time you come to this committee, you when you relate to those gentlemen in the periphery, you sometimes lose your cool. The last time you came here and I saw your TV in the evening, I said, no, that's not clever that time. Thank you very much.
Chair, okay, let me, you know, I think that we must all earn it and honor serving, and my encouragement to my good friend Xavier de Boyle there is that we have, it's in his interest and mine that we try and get this stuff